Mini episode 582 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by the Pullins Group, delivering public affairs consulting and marketing services for small businesses trying to grow. Follow them on the web at PullinsGroup.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to mini episode 582 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with another in our line of TV reviews. This will be the first in a series of reviews of critically acclaimed television shows that have completed their run and are available for streaming on either Hulu, Netflix, or Amazon Prime. These reviews are being produced in association with our colleagues in the 21st Century Media Alliance at NotJustAnotherTVSite.com, which covers dozens of the greatest TV series of all time. We will not include spoilers in any of these reviews. The idea is to provide a sense of what you can expect if you decide to view the shows, and as such, we don't want to undermine that experience. Today we're breaking down The Librarians, a comedy that aired from 2007 to 2010 on ABC TV in Australia and can be found in its entirety on Hulu. Here are the five most notable elements of this franchise. Number 5. While not a mockumentary, it follows in the style of both the British and American versions of The Office, with a delusional and difficult boss presiding over a chaotic workplace. Head librarian Frances O'Brien imposes her tightly wound style on the Middleton Interactive Learning Center in Greater Melbourne. In her personal life, she struggles with a doormat of a husband that she no longer respects, although her own efforts pretty much shredded his desire to be a man, and miserable, misbehaving children who, hilariously, are never fully shown on camera during the show. At work, where she seeks to reign supreme, her interactions with the ensemble of misfit library employees form the backbone of this witty series. Her chief underling, Nada, is the brightest and most competent among them and an excellent emissary to the area's Arab population, but her relationship with the boss is undermined by Francis's passive-aggressive bigotry. Dawn is a chronic klutz who suffers an accident and becomes an even bigger menace to others in a motorized wheelchair that she struggles to control. Matthew is a pompous pseudo-intellectual. Kai is a flamboyantly gay employee whose persona causes discomfort from the deeply religious Francis. Neil is a gambling addict who commits fraud and ends up working at the library as part of a rehabilitation program. Father Harris, Francis's pastor, spends a lot of time around the library as a bemused liaison to the community. And Christine joins this group in the pilot as Francis's childhood best friend, whose hiring at the library upends Francis's fragile existence. Others come and go from this core cast, but these characters animate most of the major storylines of the series. Number 4, the 20 episodes of the series, spread out over three short seasons, tell a separate, larger story in each season and portray a definite transformation throughout the course of the series. The show walks a fine line in excellent fashion as a serialized program with episodes that work as standalone segments. You could drop into the show at any point, and with only a little bit of background necessary, still find yourself greatly amused and entertained at what you're seeing. Number 3, the style of the show, with frequent flashback quick cuts to previous history, is a unique way of providing background for this wacky world. While the method works in almost every circumstance where it's utilized, it's the most effective in conveying the nuances of the show's two cornerstone relationships, between erstwhile best friends Francis and Christine, and between Francis and her husband Terry. An attractive ne'er-do-well, Christine pops back into Francis's life 19 years after a traumatic incident that severed their friendship, and she blackmails her old pal into a job that she hopes will keep her out of jail, since she was busted as an accomplice to her drug-dealing boyfriend. This awakens all of Francis's feelings of resentment towards Christine and complicates her marriage with Terry, an aging would-be rocker with a ponytail who is a thoroughly decent man, but one who has been damaged by years of henpecking and microaggressions. And yes, there is a triangular aspect to this drama. since Terry and Christine were involved before Terry and Francis. In fact, as it emerges, the previous relationship actually caused Terry and Francis to get together due to a misunderstanding. The repressed Francis is threatened by the sexuality of the vivacious Christine and insecure about her husband's fond memories of being with her. This aspect is also borrowed from the American version of The Office, which featured Jenna Fischer's Pam being dumbed down visually so that she could plausibly be a sexual underdog to Rashida Jones's Karen, when in fact both actresses are very beautiful. Robin Butler is very attractive in real life, so it's to her credit that she makes the dowdy Frances so completely believable as an insecure woman. The flashback quick cuts illuminate past history on the show in a way that gives more depth to the world, as Frances is eventually forced to confront issues with her husband and former BFF, and subsequent issues that materialize. Number two, for a comedy, the tone veers to a very dark place later in the first season and even into the second, but there are uplifting moments that materialize in unexpected ways as the series continues to progress. Producers Wayne Hope and Robin Butler, a husband and wife team who also played Terry and Francis on screen, constructed their world in very brave and confident fashion. The tone veers occasionally to the challenging as the first season moves on and through much of the second, as there are many moments that would fit the classic definition of the word downer. But these moments are vital to the overall storytelling, and without them, the overall arc wouldn't be what it is. The series incorporates a type of full-circle dynamic that relies heavily on the amazing acting of Victoria Eger as Francis's mother, Pearl O'Leary, in Season 3. The program's subtext of the subliminal quest for redemption, unusual for comedies, always provides hope that even though you might be watching a moment of pain that just jumps right through the screen, you might be able to look back on it in a lighter vein once you've ventured further through the series. Number one, the characters are very relatable to an American audience. Now that streaming services are making the one-time dream of the global village much more of a reality, fans of excellent television can now sample some of the best from the entire world. And while dealing with different accents can hinder relatability a bit, even as they interject an exotic flavor that would be absent from these shows if they were produced for American TV, the biggest question for each of these programs always involves the subplots and characters and whether audiences in the USA would find them understandable enough. While many character archetypes are universal, it's also true that programs are crafted for the tastes of a specific country. Fortunately for anyone hoping to watch The Librarians and be entertained by it, the Australian sensibility is very close to the American one, and as the aforementioned list of main characters demonstrates, viewers in the USA really should be able to relate to them. And while there are some aspects of Australian society and government that differ from the landscape of America, there aren't nearly enough such elements portrayed on the show to make it off-putting to anyone who would otherwise find it enjoyable. With the program's run ending in 2010, before the era of streaming really hit its stride, the producers probably weren't putting much energy toward ensuring that viewers in other countries would eventually discover and appreciate their work. But, as their adoption of A Night in Tunisia for a theme song symbolizes, since it was performed by American jazz legend Dizzy Gillespie, the program could find wide appreciation in America as viewers continue to seek out previously hidden gems via streaming. It certainly deserves to find such wide appreciation. Thank you for tuning in to this mini-episode of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.